Oh, man.
Oh, if only it was smooth. Hello, welcome to the Mac Show. Yes, we're here to discuss the week in Apple, all the big tech stories that have gone on with Apple throughout the week. It's less thin than last week, so that's not bad, eh? Not bad at all. Joining me, a quality panel tonight. Really looking forward to tonight. Starting us off, top left, Doc Rock.
I get to be on top for the first time.
Well, we can't put you on line two anymore because you've had such a bad experience that there's, even though we've actually got it working now, I think we shouldn't do it
anymore. Somewhere in the middle of the show, Patrice is just going to crap out and then I'll feel validated.
We just didn't want you getting a complex about it, mate. And the other thing, though, but you got a phobia of three, haven't you? So, and you're on line three, so.
That was just a joke, but I once met a celebrity. Unfortunately, he's passed on. I don't know if you remember Wu-Tang singer, Oh Dirty Bastard, but the guy was actually relatively genius compared to his actual character. But in the two concerts that I did with him, he is really, really weird about numbers, and he has all of these theories about threes, sixes, and nines and how they ruin the world and the Illuminati are going to take us. And I was like, this dude's kind of weird. And I felt bad because I told a whole bunch of people that, and about a week later, he died.
Well, but he didn't die because of what you said, so I think you should feel a little less bad.
No, but it was just the coinky-dink of it all.
Okay. jolly good. Next to him, Adam in the broom cupboard, who can hear us now thanks to my my ability to change correct lines as opposed to wrong lines, which I did. Sorry.
Hey.
Are you growing a goatee, mate?
No, I haven't shaved. I was going to shave for you, and then I thought, screw it.
It's only Ewan. No, it suits you, mate. I can see that in another couple of weeks. That would be a fine beard.
No, it doesn't happen.
Yeah, you like me, hairless.
I'm like Cliff Clavin. I'll have like the Wolfman kind of look going.
Who the hell's Cliff Clavin?
From Cheers.
Oh, right. Yeah,
you never saw the Cheers episode where they had a beard growing contest and like Cliff's would grow in these like horrible patches and it would just be like hideous. He looked like some hideous thing.
Oh, you mean
they
like
all
mine.
Made fun of him.
Bronwyn says that you need a full-on mountain man.
I can't do it.
Ragged beard, but you're, like, if you're anything like me.
I would love a Jim Dalrymple, you know, just like, but no, it's not going
to
happen.
There are not enough years left in my life to grow that. not at all.
Exactly.
You think.
Next thing, Patrice, how you doing, mate?
Hey, doing great. And I want to correct correct Doc. It's my German engineering juju that makes this line work.
Jerk.
No, dude, it's because I changed the cable.
Okay.
Sorry to burst that bubble, but Vorsprung Dork, no. Vorsprung 9. Next to him, it's Mike Potter. We haven't seen him in ages, mate.
Yeah, well, you know, this is my annual appearance on the Mac Show, I figured I did need to shave, so I did, man. This morning. And if I do let it grow out, it's a little too gray for my taste, so I keep that nice and clean.
Yeah, I've been going gray since I was about 23 24, so it's it's never looked out of place on me because it's been the norm effectively. As preparations for Macstock going, sir, I saw you've got all your speakers lined up and you've got the website going and registrations are flowing in, I hope.
Everything is going great. We are less than 2 months away from Macstock. I'm really excited for it. And I'm really excited to have both Adam and Chuck here because they are both speakers at Macstock this year. Yeah, it's going to be a fantastic weekend.
Excellent. I've just been having a chat with Miller about whether we can get ourselves out there.
That would be great.
Yeah, we'd love to. But I've just realized I don't think I've got a biometric passport. They've just changed all the regulations, haven't they?
I don't know.
Yeah, to get into America.
We need Barry on here to talk about that stuff.
No, to get into America, all foreigners have got to have a biometric passport, or that's it. They can't get in. It's no longer just a passport with an Etsy thing. It's Etsy, no, that's the place where you buy shit stuff. it's ETS, I can't remember what it is, Etsy.
Esther,
thank you.
Esther, yeah.
But no. It's, so if we can rectify that, I'm hoping. What are the dates again, Mike? Remind us.
July 16th and 17th. So Saturday, Sunday, and going to be a great weekend. Some folks are sticking around and making a full trip out of it, making a week-long trip to the Chicago area. So you know, make of it what you will. And if we can get a live Mac show there, that would be fantastic.
Oh, we'd come on. Whether I can get out there or not, we'll certainly do a show for you. No worries.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, no. That'd be good. Or you could broadcast to us and have everyone in the audience taking part. That'd be cool.
Even better.
Pass a mic around. That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Right, so that weekend, the Mac show is going to be on Saturday and Sunday then. is Mr. Falk having a barbecue in his half of Illinois?
It is going to be on the exact same grounds as MacStock. So last year we had this issue of people needing to get between Woodstock, Illinois, and Des Plaines, where the barbecue is held.
Yeah.
This year, no delays, no transportation issues. You're going to leave MacStock, go straight to the barbecue, and close out Saturday night with that. It's going to be great.
Right.
And if he has his way, I understand Don McAllister wants to have karaoke at the barbecue. So we'll see.
Oh,
my
God.
Don't let Don sing, because all he'll do is Beatles tracks and swear how good Liverpool is. It's just And then you get outside and all your cars will be on bricks.
Oh dear.
Don doesn't listen to this shit, don't worry, he won't take offense. No, because I thought Mr. Falk's garden had an airport. No? Maybe
it's about a block away. Almost literally. No, it's about it's a couple of miles away.
Did you actually find the end of Barry Falk's garden last year? Because he sent us some pictures. And
it goes on and on. I think it goes on into the next community. So, yeah, it's most folks didn't venture that far back.
If anyone says, I want to be back in Kansas, if they get to the end of Barry's garden, they probably will be.
Click those silver shoes together and there you are. Yeah, exactly.
I should make Barry a sign for his yard says Narnia.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Just send it to his house.
And last but by no means least, Chuck Joyner. The dapperest man in podcasting.
How are you, Ewan? Good to be here.
I'm good, brother. You?
I'm great. It's always good when I get to be on with you and with this whole crew.
Well, you're now also on the Wall of Shame, mate.
I heard that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a distinct honor, singular honor, I would suggest.
I am indeed honored.
And if no one's seen it yet, then I'm just trying to quickly get up. This is Chuck's caricature. Thank you, Len Peralta, for drawing this for us. And,
that is great.
That is. There's a few of the caricatures we've got. It's kind of like the more I study it, the more I see the person. But it's not instant. But there's some people that it's just like, oh, okay, yeah, that's him. And Chuck, that's you.
I'm in real trouble here.
I think I own that tie somewhere.
The tie, not so much. We need to find that tie. If there's anyone out there that ever sees a tie like that, send it in and we'll get it shipped to Chuck so he can wear it on a show. That's the official BTN tie.
There you go. I like that. I would wear it. I would wear it.
Mate, you know, some of the ones that you have on, I don't disbelieve it.
Yo, is it me or does Chuck in that have just a certain like Stuart Chaffee vibe, Computer Chronicles, in that the way the video is set up and the tie and the whole nine? I posted a picture in the chat in case you guys don't remember Stuart Chaffee, but when I was a kid, I used to live for Computer Chronicles on PBS on the weekends. And when I look at Chuck's video, he kind of reminds me of Stuart Chaffee right now.
I wasn't going for it, Doc, but that's pretty pretty good company to be in. Yeah. If it works. I'll have to go back and look at some of those and see if I can maybe improve.
I posted the picture in the chat if you want to be amused.
Yeah. I remember Very Computer sexy. Chronicles. That was every Saturday. You're right.
Oh, that was my show, man. I loved it.
Public TV in the U.S., yep, Saturday morning.
How old were you when you watched that then, Doc? Based on the fact we're the same age.
For somewhere between like early 18. Teens, like 11, 12-ish, kind of, when it first came out.
God, I was watching the Double Deckers and Cracker Jack and crap like that. And reruns of Star Trek on Tuesday nights. We didn't have a computer. Well, I suppose we did have a computer show. We had the BBC, didn't we? They did.
It was literally one of the very, very first shows that ever came out about computers. I believe the original show was about 83. So I think that would put me in like 10th grade.
Okay. Yeah. About that. Okay. Fair enough. The week in Apple, what's going on, what's been happening, what's all the moving and shaking stuff. My dock has decided to completely reset itself for not, God knows what reason. I can tell you that there is a brand
new... Oh, I didn't.
No, it did. The dock that I've got here in front of me. There's a brand new iTunes that says Apple releases iTunes 12.4 with design tweaks, but it still looks like the same old shit to me. And also they've released an update for El Capitan, but it's still the slowest operating system I've ever seen on a Mac. I hate it. I hate it with a passion. It is slowly it is turning into Apple's Vista for me.
Yeah.
I think it's an absolute dog pile.
Yeah, I think I've had the most issues with this one.
I've had nothing but spinning bubbles.
Yeah.
And everyone
they got a cream for that.
Every time I start this show, this is the other thing, right? This is another reason I hate El Capitan, the reason I'm away from the mic is because I'm getting rid of all of the I'm going to update, even though I said piss off twice. They just put, the computer's been on for 25, well, it's been on for 2 hours, because we set it out before we went for a curry. So it's been on for 2 hours, and then when I start the show, oh, do you want an update? It waits until I start something. I'm starting to get a complex about El Capitan. I want it gone. I want it dead. I want its parents dead.
The good thing is, not too long and we will have a new one.
Yeah, well, I've got other piece of shit to get weighed through.
We'll just wait until Lois can talk to you.
Other than the original like Wi-Fi stuff being a punk, but then that went away and it's crazy. Awful. I've been lucky, I guess. Because I know a lot of people have been dealing with issues. I've been fixing a lot of issues, but for some reason I got
Me too.
I absolutely hate it. Absolutely loathe it, like you wouldn't believe. The Marseille Apple Store, I've got a nice picture of that here for you. Apple Stores are 15 years old this week.
Wow.
Wow.
That I believe.
Well, Steve Jobs was alive when they were released, so that's got to put it at a certain date, but... yeah, there's the Marseille Apple Store. I thought this was quite an interesting start because if you look back at the walk around video that Jobs did originally on the original Ron layout, they deviated quite a bit from where they were originally, but it's still got that kind of cool minimalist design ethic with it. It's still a shop you want to go in, isn't it? And it's not just because of what's in there; it looks like you want to go in.
Yeah,
definitely does, and also, I mean, the architecture of a lot of those stores is just amazing. Not the ones in malls; those are pretty boring usually. But whenever I'm in a city where there's an Apple store, I at least try to check it out because, as I said, the architecture is in the ones in London. Most of them are pretty amazing, especially the Covent Garden one.
Yeah, you should. Causeway Bay in Hong Kong is one of the prettiest stores, and it's similar to the Marseille store with the way that the lighting and the setup is so inviting. What's really dope about the Causeway Bay store, and I can't find my own picture, it'll take longer, but I'll send you a picture from the Google Images. What they did is they on a cross bridge that, you know, that goes across a maybe like a 16-lane street, they built it directly on the bridge. And the way that it's just lit up is so gorgeous, especially at night. And what I always find inviting about all the flagship stores is the way they use outdoor light versus indoor light to create something that attracts you. That I don't know anything about architecture and studied in, but I appreciate architecture. Like, I know who some of the good ones are. And Austin Poff actually lives here in Hawaii. We have tons of Austin Poff buildings here. So when you see it, you know it. Even though I never did enough engineering to have words for that stuff, it just has a certain je ne sais quoi that just, like, wow, that's a dope looking shot, you know?
True.
Exactly.
Has anyone got a crap Apple store? That's what we should do. We should run a competition to find out the crappiest Apple store.
I can tell you,
some of the fake ones in China, they're pretty hilarious.
Well, no, a proper. It's got to be a proper Apple store. It's got to be owned by Apple, run by Apple, etc. But I've got to say, if you look at the Birmingham store, that's pretty shit because it's a long, thin building that's massively overcrowded, massively overcrowded with customers. And the Touchwood shop is getting pretty much the same kind of way. You know, you look at that picture of Marseille, there is nothing in Birmingham that's that clean and open. It's awful. in comparison. It's the one in Birmingham, the total width of the shop is the door frame. Just beyond the door frame where those first two steel poles are.
Right, that's what they called the kind of like micro stores or whatever. There's a lot of those in just like your standard shopping malls. But, yeah. I mean, even those are still pretty nice inside. I mean, once you're in there, but yeah, they get overcrowded and they're just kind of plain and long and narrow.
They're crap. They're full of customers.
Yeah, but what Apple store is not full of customers? Not to the crowded degree. But.
I don't want to go to a store that's full of people. Especially the unwashed
Apple store.
Especially the unwashed masses.
Go to a Microsoft store.
Oh, Brad, you would love
there you go.
Key Apple store. Basically, what you get is all of the tourists, some of them in their bikinis, they look great. And some of them in their bikinis, like, what the hell are you wearing? And the whole store smells like coconut suntan lotion.
Nice.
And everybody's just in there checking their mail. And it's a humongous cluster F. I don't even know if they sell stuff in that store because it's so busy all the time with just random tourists. And it's,
Well,
that one you'd have to see.
Now, there was a bit of to and fro went on in the Slack room last night, has to be said, over the Apple Watch. And someone was saying about the Apple Watch being, it's a dead sales space in the Apple Store. And I've got to say, I've never gone in an Apple Store and seen people crowded around the Apple Watch thing. And
not since the beginning.
Not crowded.
And no. Fnuff put in the Slack room, he said, I go into the Stratford Store. There is never, never anyone looking at watches. And you're kind of like, well, okay, yeah, so they're buying the watch online, they're not buying it in store, perhaps, and there might be other factors associated with it. But what I found out this week was, and I'm quite surprised at this, Fitbit is kicking Apple's ass. Now, all of you guys were going on about oh, well, you know, Apple is selling 10 times more than everyone else, therefore they don't have to worry about reduced sales. But according to the release figures for Q1 the markets, Fitbit is 4.8 million units and Apple is 1.5 million units. I mean, that's...
Yeah, but you're looking at wearables as a whole category and not smartwatches, which is two separate. Those are two separate products.
And also two separate price points.
Yeah.
Very separate.
And Muller gets a kick out of it the minute that we come back with a valid point.
Yes.
And, you know what I mean? So just ignore them. I mean, granted, that's the reason why we're on this show, but ignore them because I swear they bring this crap up just to start trouble. Ewan knows
if
that. He's actually a very smart man from Birmingham, which is rare.
Is Adam not coming on the show anymore now?
I heard Steve laughing, and so I knew right away. I'm like, this was a setup. We ate it. We caught it.
Yeah.
That's why I didn't say anything. I didn't even put my valid ass point. I'm gonna just leave it in my head where it's safe.
And sinker. Go on, Chuck. You were saying something sensible.
No, I was just thinking. You know, okay, you want to compare it to something? Compare it to the Pebble Time, or compare it to even some of the Androids. And that's where you're gonna get they're lumping together apples and oranges because the Fitbit can't do what the Apple Watch can do, and vice versa to some degree. I know people that wear both.
I'm starting to think that you've got one of those bingo cards there, because that's the second time in consecutively that you've been on where you've done an apples and pears or an apple and oranges analogy.
Well, you're the one that set it up. I just call
it. Oh, so I'm your straight man now.
Yeah, exactly.
The show is screwed then.
I'm the one that you have with the yellow and orange tie. Come on. Yeah.
No, I mean, the one thing I think is a valid point is that when Apple brought out the watch, everyone said, oh, that's it, that's just killed everything. The Nike band is gone, the Fitbit's gone, everything else is lost because of it. And I think it's quite important that, yeah, okay, the Fitbit, I know they've got the bigger version and everything, but the Fitbit does a very specific job, which was for health tracking. But the one criticism I've heard consistently of the Apple Watch is that people look at the heart rates and go, that's utter crap. That is utter bollocks. There is no way that the heart rates that I've got, and they've worn two or three devices at once and gone and done some exercise and come back, and every single one of them has got a completely different heart rate.
Yeah, really. But that is true
I tested this
for all
two
of
days
devices.
Ago. Sorry, Patrice. I was on a treadmill, and I was curious because I've heard those from time to time, and then so you hold the thing on the treadmill, it gives you a rate. Look at my Apple Watch, it gives you a rate. And right here, like just out of arm's reach, I have a Bluetooth chest band by Polar that I used to wear before I had any of this stuff. And I looked at him, and all the heart rates were within one beat of each other. Like, they were like 126, 125, 126. So that tells me that it's kind of accurate. The problem you have with these anecdotal stories, and I do know that this makes a huge difference. If you're wearing your band like this, and you can get two fingers under it, like such, then your band is too loose, and you're not going to get an accurate heart rate. But if you wear the band, you know, like you're like you, me or Ewan, where these little dots were not put in the right position for you, you're kind of screwed. But if you're wearing something like a Milanese or a Magnetic where you can get that perfect right fit, then it's going to work better. And most people are wearing their watch too loose to get an accurate heartbeat.
Yeah, Doc, I don't think that is true. I've had that issue. I mean, I have it on when I'm doing badminton practice, and sometimes it shows completely inaccurate readings. I mean, like 60 beats per minute where I'm running around and it should be probably more like 160. And that's I always strap it on correctly, so it's not too loose or anything. So there is something, maybe when you start sweating or I don't know what it is, but there is something wrong with it every now and then. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, and I still haven't figured out why.
It is utterly inconsistent. I'll say that, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, it's had me at heart rates that are just ridiculous. Yeah. And it's had me, I mean, I've got a slow heart rate. When I was playing rugby, I was as fit as I've probably ever been, and I had a resting pulse rate just before I had my nose straightened of 42 beats a minute.
That is so.
And that was a few stone ago, and more beers than I can count ago. And the other week I was sat down watching the IPL on the Indian Premier League cricket on the TV with a beer in my hand, and I was down at 42 beats a minute. And you know, anything under 50, they reckon, you know, you should be careful because it shouldn't be that low. But my heart rate has always been low, but it shouldn't be that low at the size that I am, the weight that I am, the degree of activity and stress there is in my life. There's no way that my heart rate is 42. And I was sat doing nothing. It's not like you can say it's movement that was causing the problem or anything like that. I find it completely inconsistent. Mark Culshaw from Hoya, who's been here a few times, he had a Fitbit beforehand, and he's got another one. I think he's got a Garmin one, he said. And he said it's completely inconsistent. It never sits with the other two. And the
sometimes it's okay. I mean, I also have a couple of devices, and I've compared them, and sometimes it's okay, and sometimes it just isn't. And I think that's the issue. If it was the same all the time, nobody would care.
Ewan, do you have a Fitbit or anything else that you can compare it to, or is it just you're always low?
I love you, Chuck.
Microsoft Band.
No, I haven't. I haven't got a Microsoft Band because the one that I bought for Sharon that she didn't want was too big, doesn't fit me, so I've given it to Muller instead. Muller uses it a lot, and I don't know whether Muller's going to say that it is pretty accurate or not, because I don't know that he would even know anyway, because he's never measured it before. But I know that
it doesn't have a heart.
I just good answer. I just know that there's no way that, given the lifestyle I have, I would be sitting on the sofa with a pulse rate of 42 beats per minute. Wouldn't happen.
Oh yeah, no, I didn't mean that. I meant, though, do you have anything to compare it with? I didn't.
No,
mean
no,
to imply
no, no,
that
no.
The Apple Watch is accurate.
No, I was flattered that you thought I was in any way reasonably fit. Thank you.
You were very spry getting up and down with those cables.
that's called annoyance. Go on, Adam.
I think the thing to think about is, I think all of these devices, the technology that they rely on, there's going to be occasional misreadings. The question becomes, how often is it inaccurate? And then also, is it still a tool that you can use to track changes and things like that? So if you're working out and it's constantly scanning your heart rate, and if it's off by 1% or 2% or 3% of the time, the net result, though, is still going to be fairly accurate. So what are we talking about here? I mean, and I think a lot of it is the sensor technology. So the Fitbit and the Apple thing and the Microsoft thing, they're all using the same kind of technology to do the readings. And I think you can occasionally get a misreading, and really the question becomes, how frequently is that happening?
Well, I mean, I've just got my heart rate here, and 3 minutes ago it was 90 beats per minute, and now it's 74.
Yeah, for me it's 82.
Yeah. I mean, it's because you're excited to be on the Mac show, which is
yeah, should be right, exactly. And because I'm standing, that also changes.
But like, I'm going in and looking at the health data on my, you know, on my phone, and I can see from day to day the range tends to be fairly average, and I have about the same accuracy every day. So, or the same activity every day on, you know, on average. And I can see on the weekends if I'm out working in the yard, the range is a little bit higher. And if I drill into the individual numbers, yeah, there's an odd man out, but it's, you know, pretty consistent in terms of all the readings as an aggregate. You know, there might be a high, there might be a low, but it's sort of like, you know, anything else that you do, there's going to be little anomalies, and you throw out the ones that are way off, and you take the average, and you have a pretty good accurate reading. But I think, so as long as the software and things are doing that, and that's what they're looking at, you know, I don't see the occasional, oh wow, you know, I was working out, you know, doing this thing, and suddenly I was at 180 and or 160 consistently, and then it threw out a 60 beat per minute one time. Oh, okay, it messed up once. Big deal. If it's doing that a lot, then I think there's a bigger problem. And I haven't noticed that. I haven't noticed it being off a lot consistency. It seems to be more often accurate than inaccurate. Yeah. I guess is what I'm saying.
Okay. I mean, for me, when I'm exercising, it seems to be, I would say, about 50-50.
Well, that's pretty significant.
That's bad. Yeah. So, I mean, other than that, what you said, the entire week, everything's fine. Just when my guess is that it has something to do with when I'm sweating, or I don't know, because I can't explain it. The other days, it's totally fine. Just not that one time a week or two times a week really sweating.
I think the other thing was that the Apple Watch release was kind of timed really perfectly, because I think Fitbit was getting close to being the jacuzzi of fitness bands.
Yeah. You know,
the name was becoming so synonymous with the idea of it being perfect at fitness that it could have easily just tipped over to the point that if you want anything to do with fitness, you buy a Fitbit. And maybe that's where some of the figures are coming from. And also the conversation that we've just had, he's probably had in sports clubs around the place going, you know what, I've got an Apple Watch. It's nowhere near as accurate as my old Fitbit was. I've put my old Fitbit back on. And I've met plenty of people who aren't particularly fit people either who've said, you know, I've put my old Fitbit back on because it's better.
Well, most Fitbit models don't have the pulse rate sensing, right? I mean, there's only a few models that actually offer that feature.
Yeah, but it's just interesting that you know, if you'd have said that globally and in history there's been more Fitbits sold than Apple, that's just a non-story. But
right. But
the fact that you're in Q1 of quarter 16 and the Fitbit is outselling the Apple Watch 4-1, that's more than I would have said.
Yeah, but
there's also a 4-1 price difference.
Well, price difference, but still. I mean, remember back when the Apple Watch came out, people said, "Yeah, this is the end of the Fitbit, and it will kill it." And well, we're seeing it didn't.
Yeah, go on, Joe.
No, I know people that were in love with their Fitbit for a while. They got an Apple Watch. They went back to the Fitbit, but I think that some of the fitness tracking thing for some people anyway, and I'm not going to say most, is becoming a little less important compared to what else they can do with an Apple Watch. And so they're giving it up and saying, you know what, I'm not worried about, you know, the extra 5 beats per minute. Now, in your case, you know, it's a lot more, but they're not paying that much attention to that particular quantification. They're more interested in what else they can do with it. And, oh, by the way, it's watching their blood pressure, watching their heart rate. Now, if you're under doctor's orders, then you probably want something a lot better. But I'm not sure everybody is really that intent on it.
Yeah, no, good point. Good point. Chat room is chiming in. Horse is saying that he's saying that after tightening the Apple Watch by one notch on his current band, then it was far more accurate.
God forbid, Doc be right.
All right, mate, all right. Just because you didn't know about men at hats. Don't. However, both were secured more tighter than the actual watch would be around a wrist. So it's that point of you wear a watch like you'd wear it for comfort, like you'd wear any watch, versus you wear a watch that that actually is... So, I mean, there's a point there, I suppose, about tighten it up before you go for a run or something like that, maybe, if you're really bothered. Mine's tighter than I would normally have it, but the problem I've got is that the magnet keeps slipping. And that might be gorilla wrists, I don't know, but it, and it also the fact that I bought a £15 one as opposed to a £140 one.
Yeah.
Patrice, what I would do if I were you before the 20th of next month is I would go swap it just to see, because you could just have a bunk one.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, I have Apple Care Plus anyway, so I don't care. I will probably do it.
Throwaway lifestyle.
I'd be curious just to see if it behaves normally when you have a different watch. It could just be a bump.
Mike, have you got an Apple Watch?
I do not. I make every effort I possibly can to not work out. So I have nothing on my wrists. But I was actually going to chime in with something about Fitbit. I don't know if you guys saw this, and this is more specific to Android, but just yesterday they announced that the new Fitbit app is going to tie directly in with the Nexus 5X and the Nexus 6P, so that you no longer need a physical Fitbit worn on your body. They're going to read the sensors on your phone. And I can only imagine that that's going to be deployed to the iOS app as well. So that'll be an interesting turn of events then for folks who are already carrying around this device and now realize maybe they don't need that wearable as well.
You can kind of do that with Fitbit now on the Apple Watch. There are several different apps that will take the data from the phone and pipe it into the Fitbit dashboard, even if you don't have a Fitbit. The odd part is most people wouldn't know that because you wouldn't sign up for the Fitbit dashboard service unless you had a Fitbit. You wouldn't know that it exists in that realm. So I've been doing this for about, let's say, iPhone 5, whenever the first pedometer got in there. And the program was called Sync Metrics, but they recently got bought and sucked into the Map My Fitness app, which is now owned by Under Armour. But yeah, this actually been around for a while. And Brett Terpstra wrote a script that would help take the various apps, because we were all trying to find out which one was the most accurate. It would take the data from all the apps and meld them together and put it in the Fitbit dashboard so they would all properly show up.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Don't wait to be asked to chime in there, Mike. Just dive in when you can. I thought you were being polite, so I'm glad to hear.
No. Not having an Apple Watch, I felt a little out of the club there.
And I want to say as well done Apple this week, because I got a refund. You remember I talked about this baseball game? So after I said, I ate humble pie on the in-app purchase thing, so I'm going to spend a bit more, and I actually bought a $10.99 add-on for the thing, because it's been a great morning motion thing. And I got a first round draft pick, and I got a really good pitcher, and I was well chuffed because I'd got a crap pitcher up to that point. The game did nothing more than every time I went to start a game, it said, oh, he's injured, you need an ice pack. How much is an ice pack? 80 gold, which works out at like a fiver.
Jesus.
It might not be. I made that up. But it's not insignificant. They're selling 1,000 gold for 25 quid at the moment. Mm. So, you know, that's... It's not insignificant. Anyway, so every time I try and start a game, no, he needs an ice pack. And if I got an ice pack and used it and he played like crap. And then the next game, when I got no more ice packs, it said, no, he still needs an ice pack. He just never played, effectively. And I wrote to Apple and told them about it. And I took screen captures of when he didn't play, and I sent those off as well. And they gave me a refund. So no quibble refund. Well done, Apple. Thank you very much. See, I do say positive stuff about Apple. Oh, Adam, have you got out the
no,
wrong side
I'm,
of the...
I'm,
go and shave I'm, and come back when you're ready.
I'm grunting because of the in-app, the whole in-app purchase thing.
Oh, it's
to me,
horrific.
It's just a nightmare.
It is. And there's lots of extortions take place. You know, it's not me making it up. It's like, come on.
Oh, no. Right. Like, app developers are learning how to really take
extort.
Advantage of the system.
It's called extort, mate.
Yeah,
that's what it is.
It's not, you know, to be fair, it's not every app, but more and more, because that's proving to be the effective business model. If you want to make money, it's becoming more and more commonplace. And it was just one of these things that I worried about way back in the early days when this was going on, and people laughed at me and said, "Oh, you're being ridiculous, and that's not going to happen." But more and more, when I see new apps come out, I'll see new games especially and be like, oh, that looks like it'd be a fun game. and you immediately download it and immediately realize that it's extortionware. You know, it's like every little thing, you've got to do it, an in-app purchase, and it's a consumable and it goes away and you got to buy another one and you got to buy another one. Or, you know, and then people will argue, well, you can play it for free, but usually they set it up in a way where the rules are, if you don't pay, you're at a serious disadvantage to other players, especially with multiplayer games and things like that. Mm-hmm. It's so off-putting.
Have you just made that word up, extortionware?
I don't know if I made it up. I've used it for a while, but yeah, I mean, that's what I feel like. It's like extortionware.
Yeah, I like that word.
This makes me crazy, though. Adam, are you seeing that on anything but the games, the part where it expires and you have to re-up?
Or yeah, is it just I've games? Seen some utilities. I've seen some photo things. What did I try out? I tried out something, and it's not that extreme. I tried out something. The Over application,
yes.
Which is a great little app, and one I like it favorites. A lot, but... Suddenly, you know, I used it initially, and then suddenly I opened it up the other day, and it offered me some packs for some like additional fonts and things like that. And I thought I was buying like, you know, everything. It seemed like it was in like $4.99 for you're going to get all the fonts, but no, it was like, oh, here's more fonts that you don't have, and those are 99¢ each, and here's another pack. I mean, and it's not necessarily, they're not forcing you to buy those things, and there's a lot of functionality in the app that you don't have to buy those things for, but at the same time, it just feels like, you know, the hand is constantly out, and it's just, I don't know. It's just, again, it's just kind of off-putting. It's not all necessarily bad, but it just feels like, wow.
You're an
you know,
adult. You can make a decision.
Desperate.
You're an adult. You can make a decision whether to say yes or no, but
right.
It's the inhibition of the game that causes the problem. I know one of the things that I always look out for now is twin currencies. If you see two currencies in a game, that's the one that's really trying to extort you, because you've got gold and coins, or you've got coins and credits, or you know, whenever there's two currencies, and the one currency, you know, let's say it's in the baseball game I'm talking about, it's coins and gold. You can get coins galore, you can get money galore. But at a certain point, the upgrades that you can buy, it stops you from then using the money. You have to use the gold, and you don't get the gold for virtually anything. It comes very, very slowly. And all of the big purchases, you know, if you say, oh, I want to buy myself a first-round draft pick, you can get 5 first-round draft picks for 1,500 gold, and 1,500 gold is something stupid in the tens of pounds for 5 first-round. And I had a first-round draft pick the other week, that I won in something, and it just gave me a guy who was 1-star, who was shit, and I ended up trading. So
why do you guys continue to do this? That's the point.
I don't support those games. They immediately get deleted or removed, or like Ewan was saying in that case, you know. And so you don't support that model, but at the same time, there's so many people doing it, and so many apps are moving in that direction. There's becoming less and less options for consumers. And I'm the first to say that Apple is completely culpable in creating this environment and creating this business model. I blame them in a lot of ways, because they don't allow things like upgrade pricing, you know, and it's increasingly more difficult if you're an app developer to sell your stuff any other way, because you don't have options for renewing revenue. And that's why we're seeing everything going to subscription and everything going to in-app purchase consumables. And I'm just saying, as a consumer, to me, it's very off-putting. It just feels like you're constantly being asked to pay for something. And it's just
aside from the upgrade pricing issue, is that really Apple's fault? Because at the end of the day, if I look at it as a developer, as an app developer, and also from a business perspective, it is actually, if I want to keep doing this, then it is probably the only or the smarter way to do it, to have something that is consumable where I can have constantly get money in, because otherwise the issue, and it has been this with software for quite a long time, is you have this one-time purchase, which we know in the store, I mean, to drive, the price has been going down and down for years now. So you have this one-time purchase, and then you have to support it for, I don't know, a couple of years. So you get, I don't know, $1.99 once, and then you should support it for the next 2-3 years, because that's the expectation also from a consumer, from a user.
Okay, so go ahead.
No, that's it. I mean, I see the other side.
Yeah, but so the option that developers don't have that they've had for a long time is you sell your apps, and this is specifically for things like utility apps, productivity apps and things like that. Mm. There are many that I think would like to be able to sell the app for $6, $10, $15, $20, say, mm-hmm. $20 up front. And then when they come out with a major upgrade to a new version in the next year, sell it to existing customers for $10. It was a model that worked for a very long time, but now they're sort of forced to sell at a lower price point, and then they're left figuring out, well, how do we get reoccurring revenue if we can't sell upgrades?
You can sell upgrades, but you also can sell the
other consumable things. It's like, well, you can have a crippled version of the app, and if you want these three other tools, they're 99, they're 99 cents a piece, or $4.99. And then next year, what we're going to do is we're going to bring out a bunch of other new features, but those are going to be unlocked consumables. Yeah. So it's just a different way of doing it.
I can tell you, I've done that transition. I've moved from paid upfront to in-app purchase, and the reason simply was that nobody was willing to pay that upfront price anymore, and it wasn't that high. I mean, it was I think it was $5 for a system that's $1,000+.
Developers doing, because in the beginning, if you guys all remember, in the beginning, circa 2008, there was this race to the bottom. We wrote about it, we joked about it, we talked about it, we fought about it, we laughed about it. There was this race to the bottom, and now that it hits that, the general thing is, like you said, many people cannot get away with selling a $20 app. I have a bunch of apps on my phone that are well above $20, mostly they're for video, or like OmniFocus and whatnot. But we understood that because we know those people, and that's us. Most people, when they pick up a mobile thing and they see something that says, okay, this app's $19, they scoff, unless it's something very, very unique to their business. So they're expecting to download an app for free or a dollar, maybe five at the most. And then what some guys have done to get away with the upgrading is, instead of doing this ticky-tack upgrade pricing like Over is doing, which I can say I love the Over app, but that kind of drives me insane, is when they need to do a full-on upgrade, they'll say, here's an upgrade pack that's an in-app purchase for $5. And then that makes sense. That's giving the upgrade people an opportunity. You've even seen people go as far as to have more than one app in the store, where there's different pricing of the app for like small, medium, and light. I gotta say, at this point in time, I prefer the subscription model versus the in-app purchase model, for the simple reason that in certain subscriptions, I can turn it on and off as necessary, right? So I'll admit, as a fat, lazy fool, I get into this. I'm going to work out, and I'll do it for like 3 months. And then I'm like, okay, now I'm going to get drunk for 3 months. So for Under Armour, for my fitness, I do the in-app purchase for the months when I'm all about it. And then when I'm not, I turn it back off. And then it's back to just being a free app. It doesn't show me all the stuff that I like. And then when I get, I got a bug in my butt, I got to go work out again, I turn it back on. So it's awesome. I like that. Same with Apple Music. I keep bitching about, I wish they would let me give them $120 and stop taking $10 a month. But then I'm also like, I know I'm going to be busy. I'm not going to listen to it. I'm not going to pay this next 2 months. And I turn it back on when I'm done my project.
I think you need to make a differentiation between the ones that are consumable and the ones that are just an in-app purchase, and you unlock the new feature or the capability or whatever. Because I see those as two radically different things. If I'm paying for something and I use it up, that's a problem, depending on the app, and we'd have to talk about what app it is. But if I'm unlocking a feature because now I'm ready for that feature or I need that capability, then that's one way to keep the price down to get me in and to make it accessible to a lot of people. And then I'm not being priced out of the market or not being priced out of trying it. It's just okay, now I Doc, I'll use your example. If it's a video app and all of a sudden I decide that I really need this transition or that capability in that app, and I can buy it for a buck or two or whatever, then I'm fine with that. But I don't think that it's, I just think they're two different things. I think you need to distinguish it and then decide, which models you'll support. Back to the game thing for just a second, but to me, it's simple. If you don't like this, don't play the game. I mean, you know, you and if you're willing to spend that money to get draft picks, good for you. But
no, let me just come back quickly there, because I think there's a lot of layers here. Firstly, I wanted to give the game some money because I sit and play it every morning on the toilet, and it's perfect for just, you know, I've got 5 minutes to spare here. I'll go through, I'll do all my one-to-one games that I've got with people across the world, which I love doing. And at the end of that, I'm really happy. But I want to improve, and I'm earning money, and I'm doing stuff. But I thought, you know, I've got a crap picture. I'll see if I can get myself a decent picture. And I got a decent picture. But then I was annoyed that the game took that away from me. That's the extortion part. I don't mind giving the money. Yeah. But I think the original point is that when the App Store first came out, the race to the bottom that Doc was saying there, developers pulled fast ones by taking stuff that was effectively crap and wrapping it in a bit of cocoa and shoving it up on the store. And it did virtually nothing. Cowbell, fart apps, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then everyone went, well, I'm not paying money for that because that's stupid. So then people came out with some free stuff. And then people got into the idea of buying free stuff and just having free stuff constantly. And then the devs realized, hang on, there's no money in this because everyone just wants a free app. So let's find new ways of getting money out of people. And then the sad part is that it's what it's led to more is friction between parents and children, because there are plenty of games out there. Wii Rule, I think, was the one that really started it off, or Wii Farm or something like that.
Wii Rule.
Yeah, and it was about, you know, kids would rack up thousands of pounds worth of debt on their parents' behalf, and then the parents going, what? Because they had no idea about in-app purchasing and how it worked. And there is a definite cleft between me and my son, which has been driven there by devs who want to extort an in-app purchase model. And he's like, oh, I've got this great game, Dad. It's great, Clash of Clans or whatever. And he plays. And then he's saying, so can I use my pocket money to buy? And this is the hard point, because it's like, no, hang on, son. Look, I know you worked hard for that, and I know it's your money, but I'm not going to let this tosser take it off you for giving you virtually nothing. And then there's an aggravation between me and Ellis about, well, why can't I spend my money where I want? And he's in that Call of Duty subscription model thing. He takes his money and he pays for passes for PSN, and he gets stuff with the passes, and it's gone. It's vaporware. And it's like, oh, I got a new skin for my gun. How much did that cost you? £2.79. It's a frigging bitmap. It's a BMP file that goes over the top of your gun, man. That's not worth £2.75.
Yeah.
And that's
you'd be like, son, skin for your gun is a different meaning, and I'll teach you that when you're old enough.
No.
He's 12, dude. I think the situation isn't as cut and dry or as you described it, because I think it's a bigger issue that we have on the internet, really. It's not that the devs put out crappy apps, because there were plenty of good apps in the beginning.
No, there wasn't. Not a lot. There was a lot of crap apps. There was a lot of crap apps.
I mean, sure.
90% crap now. Yes. I mean, there's only 10% of the stuff on the App Store. We were talking about
6-7 years ago. Now there is 90% crap, sure. But I have had discussions with people that have spent $1,000, $2,000 for their home automation systems, and were complaining that my app cost $5. And it wasn't just one or two guys, it was a lot.
Now,
that's the general issue.
Let's exclude the top 5% and the bottom 5%. Anyone that complains for a $5.99 app that manipulates $2,000 worth of their stuff is a wanker. I would never pay.
It wasn't just one or two people.
30-odd quid for OmniFocus, because I wouldn't get anything from it. But if that's the price they want to charge, that's fine. And that's what I'm talking about. I walk into the store and I buy the thing, you know, and it's like you buy a tennis racket and it looks really, really nice. You get it back out and go to the court, and then it goes, oh, no, hang on. It retracts all the strings, and it says, sorry, the strings were only there for display purposes. It's another $2.99 if you want to watch the strings. You know, that's the level it's got to. What you're seeing is not what you're getting. I get a first string picture with what I bought. I'm very happy with the money that I've spent and what I've got for it, but then the app takes that away from me. That's not okay. That is absolute. Oh, well, it's the real world. You know, pictures get injured. Bollocks. Pictures don't get injured when I paid $10.99 for them, mate.
True.
That's not.
I want to go back to what Adam said about this being Apple's fault, and I, I absolutely get where he's coming from with this, because this is all a bit of a perversion of the old talk about Computer Chronicles. This is all a bit of a perversion of the old shareware concept, isn't it? Yes. Except with shareware, we were allowed to download the software, try it out, see if it was going to do what we wanted it to do, whether it was a game or a utility, and then decide if we were going to pay, and then decide if we were going to buy the add-ons for it. I purchased a number of shareware titles where the author had developed add-on packs, and I would decide if I wanted to purchase this pack or that pack. By not having trials, whether it's the Mac App Store or the iOS App Store, something that can time out, something that allows me to download an app and give it a good test before I decide if I want to purchase it, that's Apple's fault. And if we had that, then developers would be able to say, you know what, my app is worth $19.99. My app is worth $49.99. I want people to download and try this and then determine that this app is worth it to them, and they'll shell out a much higher amount, and there would have been no need for this race to the bottom. The race to the bottom is to get people to download and try your app without being completely out the cash that you invested in developing the application and the hardware you purchased to develop the application. I mean, this is money spent by the developers. They're never going to recoup if they don't get people to buy their app.
I think there is a self-sustaining issue as well. Can I just come back? I think there's a self-sustaining issue. If you look at the baseball game that I'm talking about, the physics of the swinging, the graphics of the players doing stuff is fairly rudimentary in comparison, you know, to what current games can do. They haven't spent all of their time and money making the physics of the game work. The big bucks that they've spent on the development has been in the back end of how to get more money out of people and how to work the in-app purchases and how to do the currency evaluation and remunerations. That's where all the work has gone in. To actually produce the front end of what they've got is probably, you know, if they'd said, right, here's a new front end and it's $4.99, they'd be making money hand over fist from it.
Yeah.
And they're probably making money hand over fist anyway, but...
And do you guys think that it's also an issue that Apple even allowed free apps? Because, I mean, you could argue that nothing should be free, because, I mean, every free app, even the crappiest one, someone spent at least some amount of time for it.
Well, that's up to the person who spent the time doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. But, I mean, by allowing it, they basically, I mean, you are always, whatever price you charge, you're always competing against free. Even if it's just 99 cents, it's always 99 cents and not free.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, someone's talking about an Apple TV app for us, and there's some people that are going to do it, I think. And I want them to charge for it. And if no one buys it because, oh, you can't buy that just for doing that, well, I'm sorry, someone's had the time to do that. If you want to buy it, then buy it. If you don't want to buy it, piss off, because I couldn't care less. Yeah, you're not a real BTN fan. If this person spent some time doing it, they're not talking about making millions out of it. They're talking about recovering some costs for their time and their developer license. That's it. You know, that's all I'm caring about.
Can I make one last comment on the statement?
Please
do
have the last one. Then we'll move on.
This is Apple's fault. I don't remember what I said earlier, but hopefully I said that culpable. Apple was culpable in the whole system.
Largely culpable was the phrase you said.
Yeah, the idea that it's all Apple's fault is insane. I mean, this is a combination of a system that Apple built that has some restrictions and limitations that sort of force the hands of developers, and that's where they're culpable. They're also culpable in the pricing of their own apps incredibly cheap because they don't need to make money off of them. So people point to things like iWork and go, well, you know, if iWork is $10 or GarageBand is $5 or whatever the prices are, you know, how can I sell my app for larger? But as you can tell through this conversation, you know, developers also play a part in this and the race to the bottom thing, and consumers play a part in this. You know, to Chuck's point, like, just don't buy the app. If you're buying that stuff, of course developers are going to continue to do that. So everybody sort of has a position in this. I guess a lot of times people just, especially defenders of Apple, want to take Apple completely out of the equation. So my only point was that Apple does have some culpability in setting up
most
the whole
definitely.
Ecosystem in the way it is.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. Yeah, let's leave it at that before I say any more. Google at its I.O. conference, and it really... Where's all my bloody stuff gone again? Bastard. Right, so they released the Home, the Google Home, new Wi-Fi-enabled personal assistant device for the home, enables people to ask Google search queries, manage everyday tasks, etc., etc. So it's a bit of an echoey type thing going on. And when I watched that, the one thing that sprung into my head instantly is, why isn't Apple doing this? Why isn't there an Apple device that buys music for you, that helps you buy apps, that helps you get to stuff that Apple can charge Apple Pay for?
I can tell you why.
Go on then.
I can tell you exactly why. I talked about this a little bit on my show. If you look at things, and didn't we talk about this when we talked about Viv as well?
A little bit.
Did we talk about Viv last week?
Yes.
So it's all the, same reasons. It's that Apple has a very strong stance on the privacy of your personal data. And for a lot of these devices, for them to be able to work, data has to be shared with third-party outside services, and in a way that Apple does not want to allow. So in order for them to build a system like that, it has to integrate outside the Apple ecosystem, which implies sharing a lot of data and information with partners. Plus, to get the partnership deals, a lot of people don't realize this. In order to get deals for, say, with Uber or with Amazon for buying things, or, you know, insert name of service here, those companies want access to your data as part of the deal. And they try and work that in there. And Apple historically says, no, we're not going to give over customer email addresses to you. And that pretty much kills a lot of negotiations. The services will go, well, if we can't get the customer data, then forget it. We're not going to play. And I think that's the biggest reason why Apple can't do a lot of these things.
Anyone else?
Isn't it ironic that we kind of praise Apple for this and recognize some of the limitations and perhaps accept them, and yet we turn right around and beat on Apple for not giving developers one of the things that they really want, and that is, you know, access to their quote-unquote customers? I just had this conversation with a developer the other day he would really like to be able to have a relationship with his customers. That's why they left the Apple Store. Now, in this case, it's not iOS, but, you know, they left the Mac Store, the Mac App Store, and brought everything back to their website because they wanted that relationship with their customers. So it's a double-edged sword, and I'm not sure there's a right answer.
Well, this is different, though. This is, you know, I want to be able to say to Siri, you know, hail me an Uber cab, or Siri, book a reservation, you know, airline reservation for me, those sorts of things, right? I mean, we're talking about a deeper integration with outside cloud and third-party services. So this is Apple giving data over, customer data over to, you know, these third-party. I guess in a way, it's kind of like the developer thing with software. But, you know, at the same time, I look at something like Home, and Google already, I use Gmail. I know they're already, you know, scanning through my emails looking for ways to sell me stuff. And the idea of opening that up even further is a little bit frightening to me. So I personally don't choose to, I've heard great things about the Amazon Echo, and I use Amazon all the time. Amazon already has more data about me than I think I'd like them to have, but it's because I love their service. Do I want to open that up more? No, and that's why I haven't picked up an Echo. And when I look at the Google thing, it's like, I don't know if I want Google knowing even more. I mean, they already know so much, so maybe it doesn't make a difference. But the whole concept of it just, you know, it makes your skin crawl a little bit if you think about it too much.
But Adam, with the app situation, especially with Uber, that's a great example. You are consciously allowing that. You're not right. Unconsciously, because if I sign into the Uber app and hail my Uber, okay, I've shared information. I know I'm sharing information. And I think that's a little bit of the difference here.
The difference here is you are assuming you're sharing that information with Uber.
Right.
Right?
Correct. And you could still do that with Siri.
And a company like Google is going to take the location data and aggregate it and share it with other partners and vendors and advertisers and say, look, we know where this, and whether it's your individual data or not, they're probably not doing it at an individual level. They could. They're not going to say, you know, we're going to give you Chuck and we're going to tell you all the places he goes to, and we can infer that if he's spending a lot of time in this area, he might be frequenting these businesses. But they will do that in aggregate for your profile. So they're going to build a profile of you, and they're going to say, we know people that are like Chuck, you know, these are the kinds of businesses they frequent. And they're going to sell that information to advertisers so that they can market directly to you. And maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that's something you want. Maybe that isn't. But I don't think it's always that transparent what they're doing with your data.
Any way you take it. And the more convenience you get, the more privacy you've got to give up.
Right. So the question was, why isn't Apple doing this? And my answer, therefore, I think is the accurate one. It's they're not willing to open that up in that way. And you can't do these services and integrations if you don't.
At least for Siri in general, I see a way to do that simply, I mean, by having APIs and integrating the apps on your devices with it. Sure, that won't, I mean, that won't help you with, I don't know, connecting the Apple TV to, or using Siri on an Apple TV for that, or having something like the Echo, or the, what was it called, Hello from Google. I still think Apple could do it in a way where it's not a privacy nightmare.
I think if Apple honestly believes that Hey Siri is going to be great for just starting your music in your media player and then getting you a few Wolfram Alpha returns from the internet, and that's going to be where they, as far as they need to take it because of the privacy concern issue, I think it's doomed. It's absolutely doomed before they even start, because that's not what people want. They want the thing to interact with the outside world. And if Apple aren't, if Apple aren't in that universe, they're falling immediately behind Amazon. And okay, Apple's not got anything it wants to sell in the same way as Amazon wants you to, or as Google wants you to, but people are going to look to Apple and go, I want this thing to do this thing for me. And you've got the logo has been released for Siri on your Mac, which is coming. But in terms of what it's going to do for you, I mean, the experience on the phone is still not brilliant with Siri. And it's you know, there's a whole pile of stuff that Apple is going to be missing out on with that ethos that you're talking about, Adam, I think.
Yeah, that's true. But I'm saying they're doing it consciously, and I'm not sure that it's a business that they're interested in being in. The interesting thing about the Google thing is my assumption is I think they announced there's going to be iOS and Android apps and integrations. So, you know, with the Home, you can get a Google one and you're not going to, you know, you can choose to use that and not use whatever Apple offers. You know, same thing with the Echo, right? I know a lot of people who are iPhone owners that have Echoes, but it's really a different class of product and a category of product. So will Apple do that? I think at this point, the answer is no. I don't think they're interested in that market. And we can talk separately. Is that a good or bad business decision for Apple?
I just think HomeKit's not the total sum of the Internet of Things. And that's where it's going to fall down.
No, but I mean, the Echo in the Home isn't just about home automation either, though, right? And HomeKit's really only about home automation.
Yeah, but that's Apple's total policy on the Internet of Things. That's it. There is no more beyond HomeKit. That's what I'm saying. And there's so much more out there than HomeKit that they're not getting into.
Correct.
In the Internet of Things. Just a thought.
And don't get me wrong, HomeKit so far seems to be working rather well. I wouldn't say great. There are still things to improve, but it's working. It's just not enough.
And Apple is also lagging behind in media sales, even though they've done a shed load. They're still
behind. We should talk larger about the Internet of Things. Because I don't know how many people follow the security around the Internet of Things, but talk about major giant holes in security problems and privacy problems across a massive industry that's growing and seems to have little concern or little protection for most consumers.
Yeah, but it's no worse than the analog phone market was the first few months.
It's really bad.
It's a typical juvenile market, friends who are security
professionals. If you want to follow somebody, follow at this on Twitter. Dan, he is tweeting about this stuff all the time, and his general philosophy is people don't put shit on the internet because you are opening yourself up in massive, massive ways, and most of these products have little to no security. A lot of people don't know, there's a search engine called Shodan that you can find devices that are hooked up to the internet that have default settings, manufacturer settings, or no security at all. And you can access all kinds of things from webcams to industrial equipment and factories. I mean, it's frightening how bad it is out there with people just throwing anything on the internet.
Well, you know, actually something I'm going to have in my pick for my pick of the week, but I just had a recent like kind of pissy situation where I got a breach from somewhere and I can't figure it out. so far it seems like it's getting narrowed down to be from an Office 365, which I posted in the Slack room yesterday, actually pissing me off because Microsoft won't let me put longer than a 16-character password. And then so in doing so, the breach got, someone got into my Amazon account and basically depleted about $700 worth of Amazon credit. But I was lucky enough to be sitting, you know, in my email when I saw the thing pop up that says, oh, you just ordered 10,000. Here we go, in that purchase. You just ordered 10,000 coins for Amazon coins. And I was like, no, I didn't. So I immediately went in to cancel it. I'm talking to the Amazon security person. And we're watching this douchebag keep ordering stuff. And then so I changed my password, and they changed it right back. So whatever they got from the Microsoft thing, they got into my, my Gmail, and they converted so that all my messages would get forwarded to them and then deleted. So, like, I'm sitting there watching this happen as I'm going through the process. And, you know, luckily Amazon corrected everything. You know, all the money was put back. You know, the part that was done on my credit card was stopped. And I'm just doing a password audit over the last 2 days, going in and changing all of these passwords. And one of the things that got me sent down this path, after I got a message from Microsoft saying they wouldn't allow you to use longer than a 16-character password, is what is a good password nowadays? Because the old method of, you need 8 characters with one of them a number and one a capital, is actually the dumbest anymore. Thing that anybody could do for a password policy, because you just gave the brute force of the pattern.
Right.
This is the pattern to which you aim for. So you'd eliminated
99% of those are the last two characters as well.
Yeah, you eliminated a whole heap of possibilities. And another thing that they talk about in the thing that I will post is in the companies where they say change your password every 6 months. So I'm like, okay, so Ewan Rankin works for Christensen Consulting. And Christensen Consulting is 8 characters with a number. So Ewan's password is my son LS1. And in 6 months, it'll be my son LS2. So 2 years from now, I can go directly to the thing and type in my son LS12, and I'm right in without even thinking. Like, I know exactly what his password is because people numerate.
Dude, I can tell you, my company is doing that. Every 3 months you have to change it, and I know plenty of people that basically just are increasing a number at the end or at the beginning. And all so I know their password because I know when they have.
And all the admins are now God_1, God_2, God_3.
But it's so funny that that leftover from open world readable text files, you know, in Unix is what people are, you know, modding passwords after, even in some really high-end apps like, you know, Office 365. And I never expected it from them. Google allows you 200 characters. Like, you could put in the lyrics to your favorite song as a password.
Good idea. I want to say thank you, Beamer. Threw in £100 this week. Very kind of you, mate. Incredibly kind. We have blown through the third Mac Mini. We are now a quarter of the way up. I've amended the graphic. Look, there's 5 Mac Minis. See that? we are now we are a quarter of the way up the fourth Mac Mini. So thank you to him, and thanks to everyone who's donated. I'll be coming to you via email to get your message that you would like on your piece of acrylic that goes on the top of the relevant Mac Mini, and Doc will be getting those made. But we are up to the fourth one. We are nearly there. Please, 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 if you've got anything you'd like to donate, send it to bageltechnews@gmail.com PayPal account. And it goes directly forwards to buying us 5 brand new Mac Minis for the studio that are going to be absolutely whiz-bang. They're wonderful. Thanks to everyone who's donated. Just blown away at the generosity of the BTNers. It's very kind. This podcast and all this is brought to you by UK2. Say it every week, and it's got to get boring, I suppose. Just, you know, they're brilliant. But that's the thing, is they're reliable. It is boring. Being reliable, turning up for a company, being here week in, week out, upgrading services to make sure that the people that you sponsor have a good website and that it runs smoothly. Yeah, okay, that is boring. It's not sexy, but it's dependability is what we need. Please support UK2. Be dependable as a customer for them. Go to britishtechnetwork.com/sponsors and you get all the offer codes. And go to /UK2 when you sign into your account, and they know then that you're a returning customer from BTN. And we get tons of kudos for that. And literally, you know, there's been a few people who have done it in the last couple of weeks. Stop what you're doing. Next time you're on Twitter, tweet out, Dear @UK2, thank you for supporting @British Tech. It means worlds. because it does. It means oceans to us. We couldn't afford to do all of this stuff if it wasn't for UK2 picking it up. And thanks to Hoyer as well. If you're sitting thinking, oh, those Hoyer glasses that you wear, you, and they do look good. If the price is putting you off, don't worry about it. Just contact podcast@hoyer.co.uk. Arrange with Mark to have an appointment and have a trial. They'll do your fitting as part of your general prescription test. And then if you feel like you want them, you can go for it. If you feel like you don't want them, you can still just walk away, and there's absolutely no commitment to it whatsoever. They don't hold a database that's got your email address and they're just going to badge you for the rest of your life. You know, they don't keep your email. They will organise that trip with you. Mark will turn up, or one of the other sales guys will turn up, and girls will turn up at the relevant optician where you want to go, and they will walk you through the process and show you what you get from Hoyer. You might even get the VR experience, which I got, which I thought was actually really good. So write to podcast@hoyer.co.uk and say to Mark, I'm just curious, tell me what I need to know. And Mark will get back in touch with you and organise it all. No commitment whatsoever, and your details are not kept by Hoyer and database. Promise you. Right, time for the cool thing. Doc, start us off.
Okay, so my cool thing is twofold. One is very important. I think everyone should take a look at, especially after the kerfuffle I've gone through this week. Here's a link. Here's a great talk by Sophos Security. Sophos is kind of sort of known as, one of the top dog companies in security around the web. And here's a good conversation on passwords and password entropy. And it's funny because I just got a question from Bob Beach. Okay, I just couldn't help but read that as Boobs. Anyway, about what is entropy. So I'm like, oh, now we're starting a whole nother thing. But basically, it's a disorder in a system. Like, how do you measure disorder in a system? And it's a way that we have been using for a while to help you figure out how to make good passwords so that they're harder to brute force crack. And here's a great, great conversation on passwords and what should be done, including some of that what I just spoke of about, the patterns and the short numbers. And the truth of the matter is the best passwords are really, really, really long ones, because the longer they are, the harder they are to brute force. So 32 characters and above is my favorite. As long as there is some mix of case.
Yeah, as long as it's not a combination of a lot of words. If it's a sentence or something, it might be easier.
Do you know the best way? Have a simple password, a nice simple password, but deliberately spell several of the words wrong.
No, that doesn't work.
Yeah, it does work. It does work.
Trust me, it doesn't work anymore.
It does work. I've got a couple of passwords where you could guess the characters, but they're not related to me at all. They're two completely random words, but both of the words are spelled slightly wrongly.
Slightly wrongly is in itself a great word. anyway, the other one real quick is again on Anchor. This is cool Anchor case. It's known as like an Anchor tough case or something. The box is too far.
No one cares about the box.
It's known as the Anchor tough shell with glass guard. And this is a $9 case that is built similar to one of the ballistic or life proof or whatever's. But the cool innovation with Anchor just being Anchor, the great innovation is when you go to get the glass screen, it comes with this little button. So you glue this button onto your home button first, and then you line the glass screen up with the home button, and it comes out perfect. So I did it to the other phone, and it's great. I'm going to do it to this one, but this glass I have on there now isn't broken, so I didn't want to mess with it. But the genius of these guys are coming up with an easy way to put these glass screens on the phone without making them crooked, and to get a really crazily strong ballistic case for $10 when everybody else is charging you like $60 to $100 for a quote-unquote ballistic case. This is pretty awesome, and leave it up to Anchor to give you good for cheap.
We love Anchor. They're excellent.
Yeah. Good pick. Anchor, not to be confused with Wanker.
But spelled the same. Adam, what have you got for us, mate?
I'm actually going to throw a little tip out to you because it's related to a software update to GarageBand. So I think Tim Cook was in China this week, and one of the big announcements was they did an update to GarageBand, and GarageBand now has these Chinese instruments in it.
I was going to do it as a story if we hadn't run out of time talking about in-app purchases.
Yeah. So And when you download it on the Mac, they show up as a download. So when you get the update for GarageBand on your Mac, they just show up as, hey, do you want to download these new instruments and these new loops and things like that? On iOS, if you update the iOS app and you go in and you look for these new Japanese string instruments, they're not there. If you go into the drum kit, you can access the new Chinese drum kit. But the tip is that the way you can get them is you can go into the settings on your iPhone, go into general, into languages, I think it's called, yeah, language and region, and you change the iPhone language to Chinese. Now, this gets a little bit scary because when you do it, it does this little soft reboot of the phone and everything will be in Chinese. But after you do that, open up GarageBand and you can get the GarageBand, the instruments will show up. And then what you can do is just, you know, double tap. So don't move away from the language region screen. Double tap back in, and when you tap on the phone language area, everything will be in Chinese, but in parentheses, it'll show English or whatever your default language is. And so you can switch it back. So it's a little bit scary, and just be aware that it's going to be in Chinese. Some people do the trick where you count the number of things, but pay close attention if you're going to do this. Then the only last thing that caught me off guard in this tip is when you change the region language, it also adds the Chinese keyboard as the default keyboard. So you need to go back in once you switch it back to English and just remove the Chinese keyboard. But once you've done that, you'll have access to the new Chinese instruments. And I have no idea why on iOS they just don't show up. But apparently you have to be in Chinese. People read that story and are like, I'm not seeing the Chinese instruments. That's why, and that's how you can get access to them.
Oh my God, that seems inane.
It is totally inane, but they're kind of cool instruments. I mean, they make some cool sounds, so if you're into GarageBand and want to play around with those, that's the only way you can do it.
You've got all of those in... There are Chinesey sounding instruments that are not in GarageBand, like this, the Shinai and... not Shinai, the... what do you call it? There's been some stuff there. It's just not been badged as Chinese, is it?
No. I mean, these are actual instruments. So not sound loops or anything like that. They're, you know, they'll show up. I'll just show you. In here, and I take it back. Well, son of a witch. I was going to show you on my iPhone, and now I'm not seeing them. I activated them yesterday, and I'm not seeing them now.
Yes, there you go, you see. Because you've gone back into English, they're not there anymore.
They were there yesterday, though, even after I switched back to English, so I don't know if I'm going to have to repeat the steps.
The Chinese government is blocking you from using their instruments, Ed.
I was going to show them, but they show up as actual instruments, so you know how you have, like, the guitar and you have all the other instruments in there.
Maybe the Chinese have copyrighted those instruments.
I don't know.
Because they've got a high respect for copyright, of course.
Yeah.
While you figure that out, Patrice, what have you got for us, mate?
I'm going to switch my pick, and I'm going to pick 1Password, because we were talking about passwords. And you know, I mean, the biggest issue with passwords is not that our passwords we are using are not secure enough, but that there are 1,000,001 people out there that are using really stupid passwords like 12345 or password 1 or something like that.
That's 5 of my passwords have come out on the show tonight now. I'm going to have to go and change them all.
Nice. This is Spaceballs, I'm guessing. No, 1Password is great. I think it's, if you buy the standalone app, I think it's $40. They now also have a family subscription and a team subscription. I think for $5 a month, you get up to 5 people in your family and you can share passwords and all of that. And if you are a company or something or a startup and you want to use 1Password and share passwords, then there's 1Password for Teams. I have no idea what it costs. I haven't checked it out. But it's really, really a great thing. And I mean, the cool thing is it allows you to create really complex, really long passwords. The longest one I have is, I think, 64 characters right now. So long enough, I would say.
Yes, I've never gotten into it. I've got all my passwords written on a book and they're stuck on the end of the side of the desk, and I've never had a problem. You think I'm joking? Mike, do you have a cool thing for us?
I do have a cool thing, and I have two cool things. And this first cool thing is that as we've been talking, and I will admit this has never happened to me in 10 years of podcasting, there is a bee in my office. So we will be playing Will the Bee Sting Mike? And two, is Mike allergic to bee stings? So that's going to be my cool pick number one. My cool pick number two... He's right here.
Awesome if I got thrown right live, because you get to watch me die live on TV.
No, Mike.
Watch me die live on the Mac show.
Mike picks
from anaphylactic shock.
Yeah.
All right. No, seriously. My cool pick is an app called MileIQ. Now, this found its way onto my phone because I am horrible at keeping track of things like the mileage I drive for my business trips. I use my car all the time for business. I have my own small business. I've been running now for 6 years, and I'm absolutely awful at tracking mileage. And this year, my accountant said, Mike, you have to track your mileage.
Too right.
And I said, well, I'm not going to do it. I'm just not going to do it. So I went out and I searched through all the apps, and I found this app, great reviews, called MileIQ, loaded it onto my phone, and it is fantastic. It keeps the process of tracking my mileage so incredibly simple. As I take my drives, it reports back to me when I'm done. It says, all right, you've recorded this drive. Is this personal or is it business? And I simply swipe to the right if it's business, and I swipe to the left if it's personal. If I swipe and hold, I can categorize the trip and say, this is a client visit, or this is a, you know, whatever it is for business. I can categorize it if I want to, or I can simply swipe and say, no, that's business. And then it keeps track of all my mileage for me automatically. Each week I get a report saying what my mileage has been for the previous week. And then I get a month end report that's a downloadable CSV file that I can then hand right over to my accountant. Now, this does play into what we talked about earlier. The free version of the app allows for 40 drives each month for free. No charge for it. And in fact, there are no ads in the app, and I like that as well. And if you want unlimited drives, which I quickly exceeded the 40 free, it's $59.99 per year. And I find that well worth it, because it does all the hard work of tracking my driving for me. Plus, at the end of the year, I can deduct that $59.99 when I file my taxes. So I'm going to come out way ahead of the game here as it's tracking my mileage. And I just love this app. It's called MileIQ. It's available for Android and for iOS. And if you log in at their website, you can even go back and track all the different drives you've had and plow through them. And I think it's just fantastic. So that is my cool pick, MileIQ.
Tell it to track, or is it just always track? Because I'm going to compare that versus like $60 for that versus $100 for like automatic.
Well, I've never used automatic. This one, you can have it automatically try to categorize something that's a personal trip. So, for example, you can turn it on and say anything on a weekend is personal. Just automatically categorize it. I've turned that off because I do some client trips on weekends. And you can also turn it off if you don't want it tracking anymore. But one of the things I like about it is that it's very, very, very low battery use. When I go into my battery monitor and see what kind of usage it is, it's like 1% of my battery in any given day. So I think it's great. It, at least for the free version, you know, the downloadable version that's good for 40 drives, it's a good way to compare it to something like automatic. Yeah.
If you're in the UK store and you're thinking, oh, that's going to be awesome, bad luck, it's not in there.
It's not in there?
It's not in the UK store. It's America only.
I have the automatic, and I can say I love it. It's awesome. Doc. And what's nice is the new version has a GPS built in, so you don't even have to have your phone necessarily on. It'll track, and then when your phone is there, sync back to it. The tracking business mileage is a little weird, because what happens is at the end of the trip you get a notification and you have to go into the app and just flag that trip as business. But then the reporting at the end of the year is amazing. You can go in there and get a full report with all your trips and mileage and where you went. And
what's the name of that?
It's called Automatic. It's just a little.
It's a hardware device.
ODBC thing you plug into the port and it tracks. And a lot of insurance companies in the U.S. now have it, so that you can get a cheaper rate on your insurance too if you plug it in and it says that you don't drive like I do. So I never wanted one of those for my M3, but that one's going away in August and the i3 is on the way. So I might actually get one now because I'll have a grandpa car that doesn't use gas.
There's one called TaxBot, which is an automatic mile tracker, mile log and expense tracker for tax deduction savings and compliance. That's available in the UK store and it's free, but with a subscription of $7.99 as an in-app purchase. Which that's I don't cool. know how long the subscription lasts for, but if that's monthly, it's a bit of a rip-off. But if anyone knows of a good one that's available for the UK, then please let us know, because I desperately need one. Because one of the things, no, my accountant said to me, where have you got, where's your mileage logs? I'm like, I don't know. I'll have to back through.
I don't do mileage logs.
Yeah, no,
that's exactly what I said. I didn't do any.
I just have to go back through my calendar and sit and try and figure it out. So I'm desperate for one of those. Anyone who writes in, I'll buy you a pint at the Bash. The Bash is coming up. Yes, if you'd like to come to the Bash, it is the 22nd, 23rd of July. 22nd for the curry. That costs you a £10 deposit, and that includes kids need to pay a £10 deposit as well because they still eat. But then the bar bill's split between the rest of us and the kids drink free. The Bash itself, kids are free under 16, and you just bring yourself. It's £20 for the Bash, but that's everything you'll possibly need. It's all your booze, it's all of your food for the day, all soft drinks, all your tea and coffee, the rent of the place, everything is covered. I would urge you to start buying your tickets if you could, please, because if we get to the 22nd of June and there is not enough people to hire the venue and cover the costs for the venue and the food, then I'm afraid we won't have it. We'll just cancel it and refund everyone's money. So please, please, please get your tickets in now, because otherwise there's going to be, if there's a shortfall, I will cancel it, because I'm normally about £800 out of pocket anyway, but I'm not going to be £1,500 out of pocket. You can stuff that. So please, 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 if you come to the Bash, buy your tickets now and bring the kids. It's a fantastic family day. The last year was just awesome. There's a little video there on the tickets page, so britishtechnetwork.com/bash tickets, and you can see the video we made of everything that went on. It was really, really good. Mr. Joyner, do you have a cool thing for us?
I do. I'm going to follow Doc a little bit as far as manufacturer, but different piece of a hardware. This is an Anker 7-port USB 3 hub that I've got. I have discovered that I have way too many USB devices, and my old USB 2 hubs keep crippling things, so I got this. There are a couple models out there. You want to make sure that you get the one you need. This one's about $30, and it only has one of the high power charging ports. There's another one that you can get for about $50 that has, I think, three of those ports. But it's you know, it's Anker, so it's going to be great. And the idea of me being able to connect scanner, printer, Drobos, everything else that needs to be connected, and then we use up one port is ideal, because of course we have microphones and cameras and everything else. So if you find yourself starting to run short, and definitely this is also, as you can see by the cable, this is a powered hub, and that's something I've run into in the past too, that you get these cheap little hubs, they look nice, but then you find out that they're not powering or supplying enough power. So Anker 7-port USB 3 hub. Very practical, very inexpensive. Again, this one's $30. And if you don't need the charging ports, don't pay for the charging ports.
I have one on the desk in front of me.
Me too. I have the 9-port. It's beautiful. I love it. Actually, I had one crap out on me, and I emailed Anker, and they sent one. It came within like 3 days. And it wasn't that they all crap. The last 3 ports just decided they didn't want to be friends. But they're really quick about sending you a new one. Yeah, no. So.
Anker.
I can't say enough about them.
We need to get in touch with Anker and get them to either sponsor the network or sponsor the Bash with some prizes for the card cutting. And
no kidding, because we're all Anker fans. I bought a oil diffuser from them to put a nice little fragrance in the office. So I use orange oil, peppermint, lavender, rosemary mixed together, and it puts a nice fragrance into my office, because otherwise it smells like burned items all day. And those things are super expensive if you go to any of the health stores or department stores or Tesco. But Anker sells one for like $25. And it's the exact same as the ones that are like $60 in the store. But it works. It's amazing.
Okay. Cool. I get lots of emails every week telling us that that we like Anchor. So
we do.
I think. Where can we get a hold of you, Doc?
Somewhere shopping on Amazon for more Anchor Kit. Take that, suckers.
Hey, right.
Mostly on the network and then all over the internets at DOCROCK.
Type Anchor into Amazon and go bankrupt. Where are you? Have you sorted out your Chinese instruments thing, Adam?
Yeah, so I need to amend my tip real quick because this turns out to be even easier. What happened was when I deleted the Chinese keyboard, that seems to be the trigger. So forget all the other stuff that I just said. If you want the Chinese instruments, just go into settings, keyboard, and add a Chinese keyboard. And you can, you know, put it lower on the list so you don't have to cycle through it as frequently. But once the Chinese keyboard is enabled, now you have to quit Garage, make sure GarageBand is totally shut down. But when you open up GarageBand on iOS the next time, the instruments will be there. So
that translates to Adam hasn't been listening for the last 10 minutes.
Did somebody else figure that out?
Well, we're up to where are you? Where can we get a hold of you, mate?
Well, I had to do that.
You did.
My tip was bad. You can find me at the MacCast at MacCast.com or MacCast on Twitter or just about any place else.
Excellent, mate. Thank you. Patrice, where are you, sir?
As always, every week on The Mac Show and on Twitter at casual_kitchen and everything I do on thepatrice.com.
Excellent, mate. No worries. Mike, where can we get you?
Yes, sir. I can be found at my podcast site for MacEyesOnly.com and, of course, MacStock2016.com, where you're going to find Adam and Chuck and Don and a whole bunch of great speakers this year. And that is, as I said, MacStock2016.com or at MacStock Expo on Twitter.
And the dates are, again?
July 16th and 17th.
There we go. And last but by no means least, Chuck.
Find everything I'm doing. And by the way, I am doing a series called Road to MacStock where I'm talking to all the presenters. So by all means, come over there. If there are presenters you're not familiar with, there are interviews up now. There are more coming. And you'll be able to get a feel for who's going to be there and get to know them a little bit before you get to Chicago. But that's MacVoices.com. And you can always find me on Twitter as Chuck Joyner.
Excellent, mate. My name is Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. Big show's coming up in 10 minutes, and then we'll be back again next Thursday. Do pay attention, because the last set of shows that we do on a Thursday night will be the 9th of June. The week after that, which is going to be the 15th of June, 16th of June, 16th of June, we're going to be on Friday, so it's the 17th mm-hmm. of June. That didn't come out the way I intended. But yeah. As of the 17th of June, we'll be on Fridays from then on. So no more Thursdays or Fridays. Have a great weekend, and see you next week. Thanks for listening.